Now at item 15, landowner big game licenses.
Good afternoon again, Mr. Chairman. For those listening online, Tony Life, Director of the Wildlife Division. I'll handle the next topic we have here. We have both handouts and a PowerPoint presentation. The first tab behind, or the first two pages behind the wildlife tab are two pages of lists of both statutes and administrative rules that pertain to landowner licenses. There are the two exemptions for hunting and fishing and then trapping on private land, which we won't spend a lot of time on, but I just thought we'd have those in there. And then it lists the statutes that pertain to the big game license allocations and then the accompanying administrative rules that guide the issuance of those licenses. It's really fitting that this presentation is now after you saw a little bit of the drawing statistics and how those drawings work for landowner preference and landowner licenses in South Dakota. Now we're going to talk a little bit about what it takes to qualify to apply for those particular licenses and a little bit of how each of those drawings work. What's most important that I want to try to stress here throughout the presentation is that there are portions of the laws and rules that are governed by state statute, and then there are portions that are governed by administrative rule. Of course, the administrative rule portions of what governs landowner license issuances are at the prerogative of this commission. And should this commission want to make changes, of course, those would be things that you could potentially adjust. When it comes to those items that are listed in statute, obviously, we would need to have legislation to make changes there. So what I'm going to do is go through those different types of licenses, and we'll talk about the qualifications for those. And then in the end, I've got a couple slides that shows history, just a brief three-year history of the allocation of those licenses to give you an idea of how many of those licenses we're issuing each year. So let's start out with the statutes here. There are three statutes that govern big game licenses. First, landowner preference is an element, or it's defined in 41.621. Of course, that's in your booklet, and that, the next slide we'll take a look at the exact language that is in law that permits the commission to grant preference to landowners in drawings. The next one we'll talk about will be landowner-owned land licenses. While the landowner preference licenses are sold at full fee, the landowner-owned land licenses are sold at half the fee that is normally collected during a typical drawing. And then those are going to be available only for deer and antelope, as is described in statute. And then lastly are going to be the landowner antlerless deer licenses. These are issued free of charge by state statute 416.19.8. And again, we'll talk about the necessary qualifications that are there to obtain those antlerless deer licenses. So 416.21, you'll notice in your packet it's a longer statute describing some other criteria for issuance of all licenses, but two-thirds of the way down in the statute it says that in establishing eligibility, the commission may give preference to persons who actually graze or operate or live as owner or tenant on agricultural, timber, or grazing land situated within the area open to such big game hunting. So some key words in there, may. Probably that's the most important word. It's not a requirement that the commission give that permission. It does make the allowance to say that you can. However, once you decide that, yes, we are going to issue landowner preference or issue preference to landowners, the criteria are set as being those who actually operate as and live as owner or tenant on those properties described. I think another important word that you'll note here is it does not say resident or non-resident. It says any person. Now, I would tell you that in applying these criteria in the past, we've always interpreted it to meet these criteria that you had to live here, but I don't know that that's necessarily true. But in the past, all these licenses have only been issued or this preference in the drawing has only been allowed to be exerted by those that are residents of the state. So let's look at the companion administrative rules that apply to landowner preference. The last time this was taken up by this commission, some adjustments were made. We needed to clarify because there was confusion about who qualified for landowner preference. So in 2011, the commission added definitions for agricultural purposes, operate, and owner-operate, and those are contained within that first, the second page of the handout in your booklet there. It also clarified that landowner and tenants may not both qualify for the same property. We did have situations where both were claiming landowner preference, and the commission felt like that was an inappropriate allocation of that opportunity and that that had to be partitioned, either being the landowner or the tenant that would qualify for landowner preference. And then lastly, and this is probably the most important change that came in 2011, with the increased prominence of family farms or other type corporate ownerships, there was a need to establish who exactly would be eligible for landowner preference. Again, to try to clarify for those corporations, but also, most importantly, to ensure that we are complying with that statute that we previously talked about. So simple membership or simple having a partial ownership within a corporation that owned property did not qualify you for landowner preference. Again, you had to meet some of those additional qualifications that are contained in state statute there. So let's talk about how this applies. First, for elk. We have a separate administrative rule that deals specifically with allocation of preference for elk licenses. And obviously, for those of you around here recently, we had a petition to make some adjustments with this. And this one is pretty emotional. I mean, these elk licenses are highly coveted. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. But when it comes to any adjustments that's going to be made to allocation of those licenses, we have a lot of interested hunters in this state. First, again, as I mentioned earlier, it's granted only to residents. It is 50% of the licenses. This is a criteria that is up to the commission. It could be 25%, it could be 75%. It has been 50% for as long as I can remember. But that is a allocation that is set by administrative rule. Also set in rule is a minimum of 240 acres and 500 elk use days. This is higher than it is for antelope, deer, and turkey, but the idea is that the threshold should be higher. Plus, we do have many properties within our elk units where there are no elk. They're concentrated on certain portions of those units, but we draw those units in a simplified fashion to ensure that hunters don't get outside of those or using roads or designated areas that are easily found. So within that hunting unit, there may be landowners that have the property but don't have elk on their property, and they do not qualify for landowner preference. It's important that those properties are owned or leased for agricultural purposes. Hunting leases don't qualify you. If you just simply go out to a landowner and lease the hunting rights on a piece of property, that does not qualify you for landowner preference. Again, it's clarified in an administrative rule, but most importantly, the statute that allows the use of landowner preference specifically says it's for agricultural purposes that you own or lease this property. Of course, the land must be within the hunting unit. Again, that comes from the state statute. All members of the ranch family are eligible. And in fact, there's a definition within administrative rule that describes who that ranch family is. And it's not totally precise, but it does give some guidance to our ranchers in the state of who actually qualifies. And then the additional criteria is that only one license is issued per ranch unit. So multiple family members of a ranch unit are not able to exercise the landowner preference in our elk drawings. It is a drawing. This is not a guaranteed license. And I think, as Sean just described for you, in most cases, at least when it comes for elk, there are more applicants than licenses available, with the exception of that unit two or that large blue ribbon unit, if you will, where we have, I think, somewhere on the order of 30 landowners, Travis, 26 to 30, for, and I think our allocation is 250 any elk licenses, so you can see the difference between the number of qualifying ranch units and the number of licenses available. There is a trickle down that goes down to those non-landowner applicants for that unit too. Here's another very important point that with landowner preference, because we're going to talk about other licenses that are only valid on properties owned or leased by the farmer or rancher. In this case, these licenses are valid for the entire hunting unit, not just the property that the landowner operates. Okay, let's talk about how landowner preference applies to deer, antelope, and turkey licenses. These are all guided by the same administrative rule. Again, granted only to residents. Once again, it's 50% of the license allocation in each hunting unit. The minimum is 160 acres in this case, and then all of those same criteria about agricultural purposes, the hunting leases not qualifying, and the land being in the hunting unit also apply to landowner preference for deer, antelope, and turkey. Once again, all family members are eligible, and there's a drawing for license. The difference here is that multiple family members can exercise landowner preference for deer, antelope, and turkey licenses. It's not restricted in the same fashion of one applicant per ranch unit. Again, very important with this, with landowner preference, keep in mind that these licenses are valid for the entire hunting unit, not just the property owned or operate, or that qualifies the individuals for these licenses. But once again, no per ranch or farm limit, license valid for the entire hunting unit. Any questions so far? Okay, we're gonna shift gears to the landowner-owned land license. The landowner-owned land license is a statutorily provided license. It's all in state statute of who qualifies. And in fact, last year we took a bill to the legislative session, I guess it'd been in the 2018 session, that we took House Bill 1046 to the legislature to include Black Hills deer as one of the seasons where landowner-owned land provisions applied. Previously, it was antelope, East River, and West River prairie deer seasons. This is, again, is a license that's provided for in state statute, and it does specifically say the only individuals that can obtain these licenses, you first have to be a resident of the state. So non-resident landowners do not qualify for this license based on the state statute. Landowners can either get a single tag or a double tag, which would be an any deer or an any deer plus an antlerless deer. And like I said, we'll show you some numbers of how those licenses shake out or what kind of licenses landowners get. Now, while the minimum acreage is 160 acres, it is not listed in state statute. This is kind of a unique one about this one, and probably the one element of this license that this commission does have some control over. What the state statute says is that if you qualify for landowner preference, then you also qualify for the landowner-owned land licenses. So while it's up to the commission to set that eligibility criteria as far as the number of acres, you cannot set a separate acreage for landowner preference versus one for landowner-owned land. You would simply set the acreage minimum for landowner preference, and then that same criteria would be applied to these landowner-owned land licenses. So they're tied by state statute and set by administrative rule. Again, all family members are eligible for these licenses. There is no drawing. There are unlimited number of these licenses available, but you get only one per person. You also have to not have obtained a buck tag in that year. So we typically start issuing these licenses later in the year after some landowners want to apply for landowner preference first. They always try the landowner preference because that allows them to hunt the entire hunting unit. But they're guaranteed this license should they be unsuccessful in obtaining that landowner preference license if it allows them to shoot a buck. And again, the licenses are valid only on owned or leased land wherever the season is open. So this is why I think the legislature decided that we can issue an unlimited number, is because what's limiting the number of deer hunters on that property is going to be the amount of property that's there. obviously a family of with spouses and a spouse and children would be multiple hunters in a on a unit. But what's guiding here is that that license can only be used on lands owned or leased. Now, it used to be when these licenses were originally allocated, they were unit specific. So here in Coddington County, if you obtained one of these licenses, it was specific for Coddington County or your property within Coddington County. There were some adjustments made to the statute that say that, you know, it really was unfair to those individuals who happened to own property on a county line, because they'd have some property in, say, Coddington County, some in Clark County, for example, and would only be able to hunt one side or the other of that county line. So there was some amendments made, and that was probably about 10 years ago, I would say, where those adjustments were made to where it's all the property within a unit. It doesn't even have to be contiguous. I mean, if you remember, we do have some landowners who have property spread across the state, may have some property in Coddington County and some in Hughes County. And all that would qualify for these landowner-owned land licenses. The last license was adopted in 2010 are these landowner antlerless deer licenses. Once again, these are provided for in state statute, and originally they were season specific again. But this has kind of morphed into some modifications made by the commission, because the latitude within the state statute said, commission, you decide where these licenses are valid. Because when this law was, or when the bill was brought for consideration of the committee, we said, hey, you know what? This is the one that could have a big impact on deer populations. And there are certain times and places where we're attempting to limit antlerless harvest, and we want to make sure that we can continue to properly manage deer within those units. So the legislature, while they adopted this antlerless deer allowance, these free licenses, they said, commission, you decide when and where they're valid, because we want to make sure we have proper deer management within those areas. So the way the system is set up now is you can use these antlerless deer licenses during the East River, West River, archery, muzzler, and youth deer seasons. They're only valid out on the prairie seasons. And but if you wanna have a youth shoot one during the youth season, no problem, you can use this tag then. If you wanna fill it with an archery equipment during the archery season, you can fill that license then. It's only available, it's set by administrative rule that's gonna be only units where multiple antlerless tags are available. So a tag that allows for the harvest of multiple antlerless deer are the units where this license is valid. And we've got a map that ends up being a part of the application. And it ends up being a bit of a checkerboard, I'll acknowledge that. But I think we think that's important to ensure that where these licenses are being issued are those areas where we do have surplus deer and want to make sure that those licenses are restricted to those areas. They're single tag, antlerless white-tailed deer licenses, and they are issued free of charge. And that includes the surcharge. There's not even a surcharge that's collected on these. So in this case, the minimum acreage is set in state statute. It says you got to have 160 acres to qualify. And again, it has to be that property that's owned for agricultural purposes, and hunting leases don't qualify. Once again, all family members are eligible. However, there's only the statute limits the number of licenses that can be issued to a farmer ranch unit at two per farmer ranch unit. Now, it could be any member of that family unit that can obtain those licenses, those free licenses, but they're single doe tags, and there's two of them listed per ranch unit. And then lastly, similar to the landowner owned land licenses, these licenses are valid only on the property owned or leased, and it's got to be where one of these seasons listed at that top bullet is open. Okay, let's go to the, I've got just a couple slides left that show the number of licenses are issued. First, landowner preference. What we show here are a three-year history of the number of applicants and then the number of landowner licenses that are issued for each of those hunting seasons. Elk, deer, antelope, and turkey. Those other big game seasons that we have that include bison, of course, is only on public land, which within Custer State Park. Bighorn sheep and mountain goat are very small license allocation, predominantly on public land, so there is no landowner preference for those seasons. But here's a breakdown, and you can see obviously where we have the most landowners, the most property would be East River Deer. We're having 5,500 to 6,000 applicants, and most of those landowners are being successful. Now, as Sean just described to you, we do apply preference to landowner licenses too. So if you're unsuccessful as a landowner preference applicant, you do obtain a preference point, and then the same emphasis or criteria in the pooling of those licenses to those individuals that have preference apply in these situations too. But here's our summary. I guess you could see for yourself what the type of demand that we have for these licenses. And you can see in most cases, the allocation of 50% of licenses within each hunting unit, by and large, meets demand. By and large, again, not always, but for the most part. One more, and we can go back to that one if somebody wants to take a second look, but one more table I want to show you, and this is on the landowner-owned land licenses. Again, just became valid for Black Hills deer in 2018, and then, of course, 2019, the second year. You'll see in the top column it says 2019 thus far. That is because we're still issuing these licenses. Remember, these are a guaranteed license for anybody who wants one. And while the landowner preference drawing has already occurred, and so I can give you the final statistics on 2019 there, we're still issuing these licenses, and as you can see, there's a lot to be issued yet. And this was as a week ago, and I'm guessing Sean has probably issued hundreds more of these already in the last week. And up until the start of these hunting seasons, there will be quite a few of these issued. If you look down at the total, I did label it free doe. It's actually an antlerless permit. Those are those licenses that are just two per ranch and are valid during any of those seasons, including youth, archery, muzzleloader, East River deer, West River deer. But once again, you can see that the predominant license that's issued in these cases is the double tag, the any deer plus the antlerless deer. And the any deer license itself is also popular, but probably about a two-third, one-third split between what license these landowners pick. These are licenses, again, that are guaranteed, but they're valid only on the property owned or leased by the resident landowner. That's what I had, Mr. Chairman. I hope, again, my main goal is try to emphasize to you which elements of landowner preference are contained within state statute and which of those are at the prerogative of the commission and contained within administrative rule. Be happy to entertain any questions or discussion that you or fellow members of the commission might have.
Thank you. That's helpful. That is helpful. Questions? Commissioner Lockett.
Commissioner Lockett here. Back up one, could you, Tony? The one number that really surprises me is the 2019 West River. Is that correct? Only 1,300 preference licenses in all the West River?
It is. So in western part of the state, of course, we have larger land holdings, fewer landowners. That's where you can say overall there's a general less applicants there. But certainly that number stands out. If you go back to 2017, 1391, and then in 2018 up to 1440, and then 2019 back to 1337, I'm not sure if there's a good reason why that number is so low. I mean, in general, it's proportional to the number of applicants, again, because we have larger land holdings, less landowners that qualify, but why we're having some fluctuation in the success with those licenses, I'm not real sure.
Oh, yes, Commissioner Beese.
Commissioner Beese, how many total rifle West River deer tags are there? Do you know?
West River, we're around, Kevin? Okay. In all of them, Chad?
Possibly.
Okay. We'll go back and check those. I mean, I can go back and look at the email that had that information in it, and we can check and make sure that those are right. But the total number of licenses, West River Deer, I mean, specific to a buck, you're probably, I'm not going to guess. We got people grinding. We'll get that just a minute.
Commissioner Locken again.
I've been looking forward to this session, and I appreciate it. Let's say a landowner owns 160 acres, and a lot of quarters of land are not quite 160 acres. Some of them are actually more. They own to the middle of the road. Well, then the county comes in and wants to put a road in, widen the road. They'll basically force you to give up access. Well, there's a lot of people that have 158 acres in a quarter. Are we just overlooking that?
I might ask for some assistance. Andy, do you recall quarters? I mean, do we generally accept a quarter section, even though it's sometimes a somewhat short quarter section, to be sufficient acreage for?
I think we have in the past. If they are the exclusive landowner within that quarter section, there are no other parcels are out there. We've looked at that as a quarter. It never serves me right.
Okay. Yep.
One more?
Yes, sure.
Okay. If a family owns 160 acres or a quarter, can multiple family members put in on that 160 acre parcel?
They can, for landowner preference, and they can obtain landowner owned land licenses for that property. Multiple family members can apply, but the only restriction is that both an owner and a tenant cannot apply. So if it goes by ownership, then it would be everyone within the family can use that.
Use that one parcel of land.
That is correct. And then, of course, that license, if they draw it, is valid for the entire hunting unit under landowner preference.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just one more thing that looking at this particular slide here, and Tony mentioned a few moments ago when he was going over it, I think part of the confusion, let's just use 2019, it's the number of applications and then the number of licenses that are issued. And you did say that, but I think we need to be very clear on that. So for example, on Black Hills Elk, it shows in 2019, there were 112 applications for landowner preference for Black Hills Elk and shows 97 licenses issued. When we look at 2019, we had a total of 215 licenses, whatever it is, the half that are set aside for landowner preference, available for landowner preference in the drawing, but 97 of the 215 or so are actually issued. So then as described, those remaining licenses then roll down into the non-landowner folks. So again, just want to use that as an example. The 97 licenses issued there were the number of licenses issued, not total available as you described. So just for clarity on that.
Do we get a number of West River licenses?
5,782 were available to West River landowners for landowner preference.
Okay.
5,000 eligible for landowners, but only 1,300 got the tags?
Yes.
Yep.
And did you ask how many total licenses were issued?
Yeah, how many total licenses were available in West River?
You can double.
11,564.
What was that?
11,564.
So basically 1% of the tags are going to landowners.
10%.
Yeah.
Commissioner Phillips.
Thank you, Chairman Jensen. I requested this report, Tony, and thank you very much for this. I think it was great. I think it was well done. I'm going to have to study this a little bit, read it several times. The question that jumps out at me, and you've got it underlined here, under Statute 41-6-21, in establishing eligibility, the commission may give preference to persons who actually operate or live as owner and tenant on agricultural land. So we could say that that means that someone that lives in Nebraska and owns land in South Dakota, as long as he operates it, would be eligible. I mean, it could be interpreted that way, correct?
I believe it could.
Yes, I believe it could be, Commissioner Phillips. And then, of course, there is a definition of operate that's in administrative rule, and that would be what would guide the decision on whether or not that individual would qualify, whether regardless of state of residency.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tony, good report. And I think some of the stuff you, Commissioner Phillips, just touched on is two things. If somebody from outside of the state owns land, you know, how did we arrive at the fact that they may not be eligible to get a big game license on their land? That's kind of one of the questions that keeps popping up, because as more and more people invest in land, many times even the out-of-state owners that don't live here really do a pretty good job of conservation. We focus on habitat in the state, and those people many times are pretty much making the entire parcel into a great habitat for our big game. So I'm curious how or what could be done to make them more eligible for, or at least eligible, to hunt, to get a big game license on their land. And then how did we arrive at the fact that I think anybody that owns land should certainly have the opportunity to get a license on their own land? You know, because if I'm feeding deer on my own land all winter long, I would think that I should be able to get a license on my own land, and I think we've established that. So how did we get to the point where landowner also got, on the landowner preference, 50% of the available tags throughout the county? Because that's a pretty big chunk of the deer licenses, or the licenses that are available. So did I hear it correctly that if I apply landowner preference and I don't get a tag through that draw, I can still get a tag for my own land? That's correct. So I really have two opportunities to get a license, whereas the average hunter out there may not have that same opportunity. Would that be a fair statement?
That is, Mr. Chairman, that is a fair statement, Commissioner Sharp. Important to note, though, that you, while you may get two chances to get that license, you can only get one of them. So if you draw a buck tag in the preference drawing, you render yourself ineligible for the landowner own land license. You only get one or the other, but you do get two chances. Back to your question about ownership. Simple ownership of property does not qualify an individual for landowner preference. I mean, that's a really important point. Just the simple fact that your name's on the title, you do not meet the qualifications as described in this underlined portion of 41.621. Now, granted, there are many non-resident landowners who do apply many worthwhile and very good practices for wildlife management on their property. And, you know, the fact that they do not qualify for a landowner or license to hunt that own land is a function of state statute. Statute is very specific of who qualifies for those landowner-owned land licenses, and saying only residents may obtain those.
So as we kind of, crossed into another territory. So I understand they wouldn't qualify for landowner preference, but you're saying they wouldn't even qualify for landowner-owned land tag.
Correct. I mean, as we've currently interpreted the state statute, they do not qualify for landowner preference because they don't meet the stipulations of operate or live on that property, live and own as owner-tenant on that property. Obviously, they live or own property or somewhere else if they have residency elsewhere. And then the portion for on their own land, that's not a decision that was made by this department or this commission. It was a decision that was made by the state legislature when the law was passed.
So we would, that'd be a legislative move. So, for example, let's say I own a section of land with my family. I have two boys that live out of state that would like to come back and hunt on land that they actually own as part of the family unit. They just don't qualify for getting any kind of big game tag as a landowner.
That is correct. They would not get any preferential treatment either in the drawing or in the allocation of those landowner-owned land licenses. Neither of those are currently applied to any non-residents.
Okay. because I'm just one of those that believe if you own land, you certainly should be able to hunt it, and the fact that you're not a resident, I think, doesn't mitigate that issue. So good report. I think that's important and certainly something for us to discuss, as well as landowner preference. If landowner preference should get 50% of the available draw in a county versus just, you know, the certainly have a big game or tag for your own land. Totally, I think anybody who has land, frankly, if you have 50 acres, you want to hunt deer in your land, I'm one of those that believe you should be able to hunt that land. So, but good report.
Thank you.
So another way to look at it, or I mean the same way, is if you're going to tie a tag to ownership, that's a legislative issue, and if you're going to tie it to preference that is given, that's for us.
Just one little caveat on that, okay. Mr. Chairman, and that's that you get to decide what the minimum acreage qualifications are for both landowner preference and landowner owned land licenses. But you cannot set separate criteria for those. It has to be one and the same. The state statute links back to the administrative rule and says if you qualify for this one, you get this one. It's a little, yeah, convoluted, but you have the authority to establish the eligibility criteria based on those acreages, but they have to be tied the way the statute is written.
Okay.
Correct. Now there is when it comes to the owned land licenses, those are restricted only to residents by state statute.
Right. All right. Any other questions, comments? Mr. Whitmire.
One more for you, Commissioner Whitmire. On the hunting on your own land, the slide indicated, or family members, so sons of mine that no longer live on the farm but live in the state, still residents. I've assumed that they were not eligible for the landowner-only tag, but I'm just a little confused on that.
Commissioner Whitmire, to be eligible, they would have to be active in the operation, in the farm or ranch operation. They'd have to be, active. That doesn't mean they have to be there all the time, but they have to be active in the operation. And I might seek some assistance from law enforcement staff, Andy. That's generally how we interpret that.
Correct. We allow minor dependents of those individuals to put in for that as immediate family. There's a definition of immediate family in state statute. But once they turn over 18 and are not living on the property and actively involved, they would not qualify anymore.
All right, there we go. Thank you.
You bet.